So let's take a look at the first sources here from Bamidbar Perek Lamed Aleph. The background to the mitzvah of Tfilas Kelim is that Bnei Yisrael were camped at Argos Moab. They're ready to enter into Eretz Yisrael. And Benos Moab and Midian seduced the Jews to sin and to partake in their karbanos, for their sacrifices, to Baal Peor. And Hashem commands Bnei Yisrael to take revenge against Midian and to engage in a war. And they're successful in the war. They conquer them. They take back spoils. And this pasuk here describes what happens. Vayomer Elozer HaKohen El Anshei HaTzava HaBoim HaMelchama Zos Hukas HaTorah SheTziva Hashem Es Moshe. We're in source number one. And Elozer HaKohen says the following. Aches HaZahav V'yes HaKesef V'yes HaNechoshes Es HaBarzel HaBdil V'yes HaOferes. So anything that you have that's made out of these materials, call Dover Asher Yovo Ba'esh, Ta'aviru Ba'esh, V'tahem. Anything that can be passed through fire, pass it through fire, and make it Tahor. V'tahem. Ach B'mei Nida Yischata. However, into the waters of a Nida, you shall purify it. V'chol Asher Lo Yovo Ba'esh. And if it wasn't used on the fire, so Ta'aviru B'mayim. The Gemara learns from this pasuk, take a look at source number two. We're in the Gemara, like five lines in. Tana, v'kulon tzrichim tvila v'arboim sa. They all need tvila in 40 sa. Minani mili. How do we know? Amar Rava, de Amar Kra, kol davar asher yavo ba'ish tabiru ba'ish v'toher hosif l'cha hakosof tahara acheres. What's the Gemara doing with the pasuk? What the Gemara is seemingly saying is that when you read the pasuk, it says anything that was used on fire. So if you use a spit on fire or a grill on the fire, in order to kasher it, kashering it does what? Removes the non-kosher from the grates. So your tavir ba'esh b'taher, ach b'meidi meida yischata. The suggestion of the Gemara is that the pasuk put that word b'taher into the middle of the pasuk to tell you that there's really two processes that the kalim of Midian need to undergo. They need to be kosher, which means you have to get the non-kosher out of them. And in addition to that, they need to be dipped in a mikvah. They need tzvila in a mikvah.
Hold on, I think one more sheet here.
So this is what the Gemara tells us, this is the source, and as you can imagine, the seeming simple interpretation is that the din, or the mitzvah of tevila kelim, is a din d'oraisa, it's learned out from this pasuk. Again, the Torah tells you to kasher it, and then to put it into a mikvah. Now, it's very important for us to understand what we're doing. Why are we putting it into a mikvah? What is it, and what is it not? So it is not to remove the non-kosher food from the kelim. That's Hechsher Kelim. It's two different processes. There's Hechsher Kelim and Tvilas Kelim. Hechsher Kelim means to take the non-kosher out of it. Even if it's brand new, you still have a chiyuv to do Tvila, even if it was never used. Not because we think maybe it was used and we didn't realize. Tvila is a whole different process. So it's not kasher. It's also not removing the tumah. It's not removing tumah. This is not tumah v'tahara. This is a third possibility. So it's not kashering and it's not tumah v'tahara. What is it? So if you take a look in the Shulchan Aruch, the Shulchan Aruch packet I gave you, I don't know if I have enough, so some people might have to look on. If you look in the Taz, which is on the left side of the page, so in Os Aleph, towards the end, it's the third line in the Taz, starting from the second word, v'tam ha'tfilo, k'dei sheyetzu mitum aso sha'ovdei kochavim, L'kdushaso shel Yisrael. What does that mean? It's leaving the tumah of the Akum and it's entering Kedushas Yisrael. Fascinating. One of the Rishonim from Ashkenaz says that it's like a geirus process for the Kelim. What does that mean? It's not tumah v'tara. That's not what it means. Tumas Akum to Kedushas Yisrael. It doesn't say Taras Yisrael. It says Kedushas Yisrael. It sounds almost like that we are somehow directing it towards a higher purpose, like a Gehrus process. The idea, I think, that he's getting at is that we believe as Jews that everything physical, we use it in order to direct it towards a more holy purpose in life. That's why we engage in the physicality. Because we know that by engaging in the physicality, that not only elevates the thing, but it elevates us as well. Shem put us into a physical world in order to engage a physical world. So it seems almost like we're taking something that was until now used for mundane purposes, this worldly purposes, and initiating it into a new tafkid, that it's now going to be used for a higher purpose. Because when we eat, especially eating is something that we believe is not just something that makes us happy in our belly, but it's something that we use towards a higher purpose. And therefore, it could be that that's part of what we're doing with Tfilas Kelim, that we're saying that these pots, these pans, these forks, these knives, we're not just using them to fulfill our own physical desires, but we're doing this for a higher purpose, like everything that we try to do in life. So that is the process of Taras Kelim, and it's important to stress, again, to remember that this is not Hechsher Kelim, and this is not Tumah V'Tahara. This is a third avenue, a third arena, and this is Kedushas Yisrael, to give our pots and our pans, to give them some type of element of Kedusha, which again, Kedusha means to be set aside for a higher purpose. That's the whole idea of Kedusha.
Even pots that are made in Eretz Yisrael?
Even pots, well, we'll see, pots that were made by Jews,
yeah.
So they already are considered to have that additional level. But something that came from a Gentile, the assumption is that when a Gentile has a kli, so he uses it for mundane purposes, not bad purposes, but mundane purposes. Even in many other religions, we know, probably most significantly Christianity, the belief is that in order to be holy, you need to separate yourself from physicality. You need to cut yourself off from physical pleasure. And we believe quite the opposite. Everything, the most holy thing is the union between a husband and a wife. That's the ultimate kedusha. We don't believe that our elite should be celibate. The opposite. And the entire base of Mikdash experience was around food and wine. Everything was to elevate the mundane. That's what we believe in. We believe in elevating the mundane. So the kelim that we're going to use to engage food needs to go through this process of directing and initiating it towards a higher goal. Yes. Oh, so we're going to get to those things. Good, good. They should also need it. It shouldn't be limited. Right, right. Okay, good. We're going to talk about that. One other point of introduction is Tfilas Kelim D'Oraisa or D'Rabbanan. It seems pretty clear that it's D'Oraisa. We're running out from a pasuk. There are some Rishonim that suggest that Tfilas Kelim is only D'Rabbanan, and the pasuk is an asmachta, meaning that the pasuk is just a hint to the idea, but that the Yisod is really only D'Rabbanan. However, many, many Rishonim assume that it's D'Oraisa, and there are a number of very important afkamina, whether it's D'Oraisa or D'Rabbanan. What I'm going to show you right here, it's explicit in the Shulchan Aruch. If you flip to the very last page. They're kelim that are non-kosher.
Non-kosher.
And you have, not that it wasn't used, it was used. We took these over from the Minyanim. They used it for pork. So first we're going to be metayer it by putting it into fire. And then it says, but also put it into water. What do you have to put it into water for? You already koshered it with the fire. So we see from there that not only do you have to take out the unkosherness of it, but you also need to elevate it. One is like taking off the bad, and then one is elevating towards a higher level. Oh, so you would think that, but then after that, it says in the pasuk, and anything that wasn't used straight on the fire, you should put into boiling water. So that's how go. So the question is, what's this middle few words about putting it into the water? If you take a look at the very end, and this is something that I see sometimes at the mikvah, second to last page, we're in Sif Yud Dalet. Okay, it's the very second to last page in the packet in the Shulchan Aruch, Sif Yud Dalet. Shulchan Aruch writes as follows. Yeah, page Ayin Zayin is on the top. Oh, sorry, this is the Shulchan Aruch. Do you have that there? So if you take a look at the Shulchan Aruch, Sif Yud Dalet, so he tells us, Ein Ma'aminim Katan Al Tvilas Kelim. Can a parent send a child who's not bar mitzvah to do tefillas kelim? It's just a process that has to be done. So says the Shulchan Aruch that we're not mamim. We don't trust the child. Now, does trust the child mean that we think he's going to lie? He said he didn't even do it. Or it means that we don't rely on him that he's going to do it properly. So we're not discussing that right now. But you cannot send a child to do tefilas keilim. Take a look in the Taz on the right side. Taz, Tes Zayin. Taz is also Tes Zayin. In Sifkatan Tes Zayin, what does he say? Why don't we believe a katan? Lefish tefilas keilim diuraisa. V'im tavlo lefnei gadol osa tefila. You know why we don't believe a katan? Because it's a din diuraisa. If it would be a din derabanan, we trust the katan. But because it's a din diuraisa, we don't trust the katan. So that's nafka mina number one. Is it diuraisa or is it derabanan? The first practical difference, whether it's diuraisa or derabanan, is can a katan do it? And the Taz paskins, it's diuraisa, and therefore a child can't do it. Another nafka mina. If there's a gadol with him, then it's okay. The child can be the one to put it in, but it has to be a gadol omed al gabav. Even the chakil, it's okay. Yeah. Right.
You can send him to the mikveh and say, just make sure there's an adult.
Make sure there's an adult with you, right. Well, without your question, then, is the issue here of trusting him, or is the issue trusting that he did it properly? If it's trusting him, then he can't come back on his own and say that he did it with a gadol there, because we still don't trust him. Nafkamina number two. What do you mean if he did it with a kid? You have to do it again. Doesn't count. Issue number two, suffix. Your wife takes out something from the closet and says, oh, I'm so happy to use this. We've never used it before. So you say, oh, did we tuvel it? And she goes, I don't remember. I remember I had it on the side. I was planning on tuveling it. I don't remember if I did or not. What's the din? If tefillah is Caleb's diuraisa, what principle do we apply? Safek diuraisa l'chumra. You're going to have to go tuvel it. Maybe with a bracha. It's part of the question here is what's considered a safek? If tefillah is Caleb's only a derabanan, so then it's okay. You don't have to tuvel it. You can assume that it was tuvled if you have a real suffix. I mean, you can't just say, maybe we tuvled it. You have to have some type of actual suffix in your head. I remember putting it in the car. I don't remember if I actually tuvled it. But that would be nafka mina number two. Nafka mina. Right, so the bracha. So the bracha you might not know. Right. The kolbo. So it's a rishon, but he's not, Rashi, the Rashba, they also say that it's the rice. So there's a little bit of a debate in the Rambam. The Rambam says it's Divrei Sofrim, we never know what that means. Is that Diyaraisa, is that Derabanan? But the other Nafka Mina is a very interesting machlokas. This is really not telling on whether it's Diyaraisa or Derabanan. Everyone says this even if it's Diyaraisa, but it's an interesting corollary discussion. Let's say there's a chiyuv to do it mid-Diyaraisa, but let's say you don't. What type of Isser are you over on? Are you over on an Isser Diyaraisa, or are you over on an Isser Derabanan? Chassam Sofer says, if the chiyuv is diuraisa and you don't do it, you're over on an issur diuraisa. But other achronim suggest that it's only an issur derabanan to use a kli that wasn't tovel. So when we go back to the question of the safek, now I'm not so sure what's the halacha. I don't know if I toveled it. My chiyuv to tovel it is diuraisa. I don't know if I toveled it. Safek diuraisa mulchumra. But to use it is only a derabanan. If I would use it untoveled, it would only be an iser derabanan. So now it's a suffix if I'm going to be over on an iser derabanan. So maybe I can go lekula. What everybody agrees, and this is just an important halacha to know, is that food that was made in untoveled kalim is mutter to eat. It doesn't generate an iser. This goes back to what we spoke about a few minutes ago. This is not a sugya of kosher. This is not a question of whether the pots are not kosher, and therefore you used it, so now the food becomes not kosher. It's a whole different question. It's nothing to do with kashrus. So if you went to a relative, and you're really not so sure if the relatives are makbid on tefilas keilim, and they cooked you something, and you know that they keep kosher. They're makbid for kosher, certainly when you're over. And they make you something to eat that you know it's kosher. You don't know if the pot that they made it in was tovled or not. You're allowed to eat it. You can't eat it with non-tovled keilim. They give you a fork, and you're not sure if the fork was tovled. So then we're going to get back to this question of, I know that they're makbid about certain things, not everything. There's certainly room to be makel if you have a good sad that there's a good chance that they tumbled it. So we could perhaps assume that, first of all, the whole issur might only be diuraisa, be derabanan. Even if it's diuraisa, there are opinions that hold that using it is only derabanan. So there might be some room to, and we're going to talk about other wiggle room when you're at someone's house and you don't know if they tumbled their kelim. But food that was made in non-toveled dishes is not asr to eat.
So
it's not kashrus.
And you know it's a nuclear fork or a knife.
Oh, that's because it's not owned by a Jew. Correct. If it's owned by a non-Jew. And that's, we'll talk about it, but that's a little bit of a shtick that a lot of kosher hotels do, Jewish-owned hotels, is that the maitre d', Ahmed, who's the maitre d', they sell him all of their silverware. So that way it's owned by a goy, and then they don't have to tovel it, because nobody wants to take 500 forks and have to go and start toveling everything. Well, I mean, the bigger issue is if Achman wants to take all the silverware with him, and they say, oh, you can't take it. What do you mean you can't take it? I thought it's his. I thought you gave it to him. So that's why I said it's a little bit of a shtick sometimes.
They take it back from the
goy. Then everything has to be doubled. Right. That's why in a lot of shtaros, it says, some shtaros say that they're selling the blios. Your shtar when you sell your chametz should not say in it, I'm selling my kelim to a goy. Because if you sell your kelim to a goy, when you get them back, you have to do tefillah on them. You don't want to do tefillah on all your kelim. So everyone thinks, this is a perfect example, everyone thinks, oh, I'm going to be really machmir. I'm going to sell all my kelim to the goy, and that way, I don't have to worry about any chametz in my kelim. Especially, you don't have to worry about chametz in your kelim anyway, because it's inside the kli. There's no problem with chametz that's in a kli. But some people are machmir to sell the blios that are in the kli, whatever absorption there is. But to sell the kli is really problematic. Okay, so this is just an introduction. We spoke a little bit about what's the tafkid, what's the purpose, what's the tachlis here of doing tefillas kelim. It's not kashrus, it's not tumah v'tahara. It's something about initiating the kelim into what we're all about, using the physical for our elevated purpose. We discussed some of the d'oraisa d'rabbanan issues. I'd like to jump right into the Shulchan Aruch, and let's really get started. I want to, you know, crack open the binding here and start with Sif Aleph. So the Gemara, if you look on the source sheet that I give you, not the Shulchan Aruch, the source sheet, let's take a look here at the Gemara. The Gemara here clarifies for us what types of kelim require tefillah. Maskifla Rav Sheshes. It's in the middle of a discussion we're picking up. He asks about Zuza the Sarbol, which are scissors of a barber. Maybe all metal kelim that you use in your house need tefillah. So he says back to him, no. Kli Se'uda Amur in the Parsha. It's only Kli Se'uda. It's only kelim that you use for a Se'uda. Amar of Nachman, Amar Abba Barahua, Lo Shanu Ela Bilikuchin, Ukimaisa Shehaya. And it's also only referring to something that was purchased, like by Midjan, like Maisa Shehaya, like the original story of Midjan, Aval She'ulin Lo. But borrowed kelim do not require tefillah. So right here in the Gemara, we learn two rules. Number one, it has to be clay seudah. It has to be something that you use at your table for eating purposes or for preparation of food. And we're going to get into lots of examples of things that do not count as clay seudah. Number one, clay seudah. Number two, it has to be that you bought it from a Gentile. It was mekuchin from a non-Jew. Let's take a look at Sfarta Shachar. Hakonim Obed Kochavim Klei Seuda. If someone buys from an Obed Kochavim Klei Seuda, everyone sees Rayanam and Sif Aleph, starting the first Sif in the Shulchan Aruch. Hakonim Obed Kochavim Klei Seuda Shel Matechas, O Shel Zchuchas, O Kelim HaMitzufim BeOver. So you buy Klei Seuda, and they're metal, or they're glass, or they're covered in Ovar, which is Oferes. What's Oferes?
Lead.
Mibifmin, and it's covered on the inside with metal, some type of metal. Lead is a type of metal. Afapim shem chadashim, and even if they're new, sarach lahat bilam de mikvah o mayan shel arbayim so. You have to put it into a mikvah of arbayim so. So there are a number of chidushim here that we read. There's a lot in to unpack here. So we already see here what we saw in the Gemara. You have to be koneh from the Obed Kochav. It has to be clay seudah. Let's just talk for a second about being kona from Obed Kochavim because it was brought up. If you get a kli from Chutz Laretz, you have to assume that it's coming from a Gentile. There are Jews who own companies in Chutz Laretz, but ruba de ruba of factories, especially nowadays where everything's coming from China, almost I imagine that 99%, if not higher than that, of the factories in China are not owned by Jews. And you can correct me. But I imagine but the Chinese government probably still has a majority holding in each of these companies. So any kli that you get from Chutzlaritz, you have to assume is coming from a non-Jew. Abkidei kach, you can make a bracha. You don't have to be choshesh. Oh, it's a suffix. We don't make a bracha when we have a suffix. Even things that are sold here in Eretz Yisrael, religious items, nowadays are all made in China. It used to be 20 years ago, you bought things like in Mei Sharim, and it was from like an Israeli company, and it was made here in Eretz Yisrael. Now, someone was even showing me things that say on them, made in Israel, are made in China. And it says on it, made in Israel, and it's really made in China. So it's very, very hard to assume nowadays, unless you know that it was made here in Eretz Yisrael, it's very hard to assume that things were made in Eretz Yisrael. Almost everything that we get, it comes from overseas. So especially things like cutlery and things like that. Like the companies like Na'aman, which you know they used to make things in Israel, but the stuff now comes from Chutzlaritz. You have to put it into a mikvah, and it says you have to put it into a mikvah of 40 sah. A 40 sah mikvah is the mikvah that we use for a person. It said in the pasuk, what was the lashon of the pasuk? Remember what did it say? B'mei nidom. And mei nidom might make you think that we're talking about Tumah V'Tahara. That's not why it says mei nidom. It tells me that I have to use a mikvah that would be kosher for a person. Just to explain the significance of that. By Tumah V'Tahara, you don't need 40 sah. If you have a machat, if you have a needle that's tamei, and you want to be metairei, you can put it into revius of water. Mikvah water, but only you need a revius. You don't need 40 sah. 40 sah is for a person. But kalim also require 40 sah. Which again, if we go back to our original presentation, that's a very strong indication that the whole process of tefilas kalim is not about Tumah V'Tahara. It's much more like gavus of a person. It's about turning the kli into a Jewish kli. It's about directing it towards this higher purpose of why we put things of mikvah. What materials require tefillah? So we spoke a little bit about what type of water you have to put it into. Spoke a little bit about why. What types of materials, what types of kalim need to go into the mikvah? What did it say in the Shulchan Aruch? The Shulchan Aruch gave us three examples. Kli matechos, right, metal. Tzchuchis, glass. And kalim that are mitzupim with metal on the inside. So let's first speak about metal. If you take a look in the Pasuk outlines for us six different examples of metal. What did the Pasuk say? Zov, good, gold. Kesef. Copper. Barzel is iron. Bedil, tin. And Oferis is lead. Six different types of metal. It happens to be that in ancient times, like in antiquity, they really only knew about seven metals. They had these six metals plus mercury. But mercury is usually often in a liquid form. But there are only seven metals that they knew about. So these metals all require tefillah in a mikvah. Now, there are a lot of metals that we have found and learned. It's not only a question of finding them, but it's knowing how to mine them and turn them into usable metals that are not mentioned. They didn't have them back then. I mean, obviously they had them, they were in the ground, but they weren't in use back then. So in the times of the Rishonim, for instance, they found zinc. But in more modern times, past 200 years, so now we have aluminum, we have titanium, we have steel. So there's a big discussion in the Achronim if these things need tefillah in a mikvah, because the Torah outlines only six. It doesn't speak about titanium. It doesn't speak about aluminum. Now, maybe the six are just examples. Six examples, and it's all metal. It's just giving examples. Maybe not. Maybe it's these six to the exclusion. The Torah knew about the other metals, so maybe it's these six to the exclusion of other things. Just mentioned very interestingly that this is a major discussion when it comes to Tumah V'Tahara, because metal kalim can become tummy. Again, we're not talking about tummy today. We're talking about tefillah scalim. But if we just, to digress for a second, in the world of Tumah V'Tahara, metal kalim are one of the classic things that become tummy. So, big shiloh that was asked to Rav Moshe Feinstein, which, if there are any Kohanim in the room, they know that it's an issue. When you're in a plane, you fly over a cemetery. So a cemetery, a kever, the tumah goes all the way up to Shamayim. So if you fly over a cemetery, you're exposing yourself to tumah. Certainly if you fly over a Jewish cemetery here in Eretz Yisrael. Oh, so that's the question. Are you in an ohel? In order for it to be an ohel, the object that you're in has to not be mekabel tumah. Like when you're in a house, the roof stops because the roof is not mekabel tumah, it's mechuber lekarka. But an airplane's not mechuber lekarka. So when you're sitting on a plane, does the bottom of the plane protect you? You might have seen these pictures of people sent around once of some of like a very, very firm-looking guy on a plane in like a bag or something. So he's trying to protect himself from the tumah. But it is a real issue. The El Al has certain flights during the week that Kohanim know. Do not, they're a different flight, everyone knows, they're different flight plans out of Israel. There's a big, big cemetery right outside of the airport. And there's certain days when, I think El Al switched that, I think they never take that path. But for years, there were certain days that they didn't fly over that cemetery. And the Kohanim knew to go on those planes. So Rav Moshe was asked, can a Kohen be in a plane over a cemetery? So it revolves around this question, because planes are not made out of iron or gold or copper. They're made out of steel, they're made out of titanium. So those are not metals that are mentioned in the Torah. So Rav Moshe says, maybe only the metals that are mentioned in the Torah are mekabel tumah. So maybe the plane is not mekabel tumah. So that's a big discussion about planes. If what was that?
Metal only is tumah when you touch it.
Yeah, but if the tumah is coming up from shamat, from the ground, and the plane is something which is mekabel tumah, so it doesn't serve as a barrier, and when the Kohen is sitting in the plane and he goes over a grave, he becomes tumah, because there's nothing that's chotzeis. But if the titanium and the steel is not mekabel tumah, so then it creates a chatzitza, a barrier, and he doesn't become tumah. So that's just an interesting side discussion, but that same discussion was had here. Do these other kalim require tefillah? Because at the end of the day, they're not one of the metals that are mentioned in the Torah. So most poskim assume that the metals that are mentioned are examples. First of all, a lot of us have stainless steel silverware. A lot of us, titanium pots and pans are very in to get titanium pots and pans. Most poskim say that these metals also require tefillah and with a bracha. And that is the way that the majority of poskim pass. So anything that's metal requires a bracha. Now, if you're going to do your tefillah, and you have a lot of things to tovel, and you have one thing that's made out of copper or silver, and you have other things that are made out of steel and titanium, so you might as well make the bracha on the copper or the silver, which is a vadai vadai chayav in a bracha, and then you'll do all the tefillah together. Right? You only make the bracha on the first thing that you put in. So you might as well make the bracha on the thing which is a vadai, and not the thing that's a machlokas. But at the end of the day, most folks can pass in, you make a bracha, and you are high in tefillah on metals that are not mentioned in the Torah. Glass. So the Gemara continues, that Gemara that we started reading, and the Gemara says, the bottom of the Gemara in source 3, Amar Rav Ashi, hani kli zchuchas, these glass kelim, hoil v'chi mishtabru, yesh lem takana, v'kechli matechos dami. Since a metal kli, if it gets damaged, what can you do with it? You can fire up the oven, and you can melt it down and reform it. Glass also can be melted down, and it can be reformed. So that makes glass like metal, and therefore it's chayiv. This is a big mistake that a lot of people do not know. Glass kelim require tefillah with a bracha. A lot of people assume that glass, midrabbanan, it is, it's only drabbanan. We make brachas on drabbanans also. Glass kelim require tefillah, and they require tefillah with a bracha. Now again, if you're going to tovel glass and metal, and you have metal that's chayiv in a bracha midiraisa, so you should make the bracha on that which is chayiv midiraisa.
Why drabbanan? The pasuk says glass.
The pasuk doesn't say glass. Zchuchas isn't mentioned. Zchuchas was actually, glass was actually really not used so much in biblical times. Because to make glass, you have to get a fire extremely, extremely hot. And it took them time, historically, until they were able to design ovens in a way that would be able to get to that heat. So glass is not mentioned there, and that's why glass is only derived on it.
All the wine we buy today, glass bottles, the table we've done before.
Oh, so we're going to talk about that also. About when you get it right, when you get something new. When you get something new that's sealed, Ask me about a tuna fish can. I buy tuna fish in a tuna fish can. It's metal. Did they tovel? It's star-kissed, but they toveled it before they're set. I buy it off of him. I didn't buy tuna. He didn't give me tuna in my hands. He gave it to me in a kli. It's my kli. So why doesn't that mean tefillah? How can I eat out of the tuna fish can or even serve out of the tuna fish can? Oh, so we'll see if that makes a difference also. Good.
If you take a glass bottle of wine, if we fill it in the refrigerator...
No, I want you to say, I opened up my freezer last night, and I saw that my wife had taken our glass coffee container, and she filled it up. She washed it out, and she filled it up with barley. She was using it to keep barley in the freezer. So I said to her, oh, do we have to tumble this? You'll have to come, please. Maybe she's hiding in the women's section. He said, you're going to have to come to the shir tomorrow to find out. Can you use it? So we'll talk. Moshe has a great shuba about that. But just a couple of things about glass. First of all the other types of glass that we use, Pyrex, Duralax, these are the thicker glasses, or Corel, people have Corel. These are all, it's called tempered glass or treated glass. It's all glass. It all requires tefillah. But because glass is only durabanan, there are a few kulas. Kula number one, very interesting, is snow. The poskim write that you can do tefillah in snow. It has to be a very large amount of snow because that's to be the amount of snow that would melt and make 40 sun. So it needs to be a lot of snow, but you can do tefillah in snow with glass. So if you ever find yourself out in the Arctic somewhere and you can't find a mikvah, you can do tefillah in snow on glass. Number two, who can give me another nafkamina? Give me another nafkamina. We learned it already today. It was in the Shulchan Aruch. Hold on one second. We learned it earlier today in the Shulchan Aruch. If it's durabanan, there's a kula. In the very beginning, we were discussing if it's d'oraisa or d'rabbanan. We said, oh, because it's d'oraisa, something was not allowed. Anyone remember? It was at the end.
Child,
exactly. We said that a child can't do tefillah, and the Taz said, why not? Why not? Because it's d'oraisa. So if tefillah's kelim on glass is only d'rabbanan, what does that mean you can do? I could send Junior to the mikvah, and he could do the tefillah for you. So halacha l'maisa, a child can do tefillah, he knows the halacha, he can do tefillah on a glass dish because it's only durabanan. This is explicit in Rebbe Kiva Eger. This is not like, some cool I came up with here in Beit Shemesh. Rebbe Kiva Eger in on the page. If you take a look, go back to that last page. Go back to that last page, underline it so you see it, so you can prove it to your kid when you send him out. He says, I don't want to do it. I'm not allowed to. I don't want to walk across town to go to the mikvah. I'm only a child. So if you look in Chiddush Rebbe Kiva Eger, he says, see where I am? Chiddush Rebbe Kiva Eger on the last page. By Yud Dalid, Chiddush Rebbe Kiva Eger. Lefizeh, everyone sees where I am? Last page, Chiddush Rebbe Kiva Eger. It's on the right side, right under where the Shulchan Aruch ends. Hagos Rebbe Kiva Eger. Yeah, people are with me? Last page, Hagos Rebbe Kiva Eger. Yeah, we got it? Says Rebbe Kiva Eger as follows. Lefizeh nira l'nias daiti. Typically zchuchis ma'aminin l'katan. De b'cholzeh l'kuli alma ha'tfila rak d'rabbanan. It's only the rabbanan tfila on a glass kli. And therefore a katan can be memon. So that's nafkamina number two. And now you better tell me nafkamina number three because we already talked about this as well. What's Sufik? Exactly. Nafkamina number four. The nafkaminas we brought in the beginning when we were being machmir, that's the oraisa. When we're talking about glass, now they're all lakula. So if you have a suffix, your wife's not sure. Did we tumble the glass? Did we not tumble the glass? It's only durabanan, we can go lakula. And Rav Moshe writes on this, but it has to be a real suffix. You can't say like, well, I don't know, so I guess it's a suffix. No, there has to be a reason why you think that maybe you did. Right? Everything's always a suffix. Like, you can't say for sure nobody tumbled it. That's not a suffix. Suffix means if you have a real suffix, if you did it. But here again, if it's a suffix, you can definitely go lakula when we're dealing with glass. So metals have to be tuvled with a bracha, all metals, not only the ones mentioned in the Chumash. Glass is only chayav midrabanan, but it needs tefillah with a bracha. It's only midrabanan though, so there's some kulos. Child. Oh, so we're getting to that right now. Ceramics, porcelain, stoneware, anything that's made from clay, from stone. So what was unique about metal and glass that we said made it chayef? the fact that if it can be fired up and it can be reformed. If you break pottery, pottery is done once it breaks. So pottery is not included in the chiyuv. Pottery, you are potter from toveling pottery. This includes really all forms of ceramic, earthenware, stoneware, porcelain. This is quoted here on the page in Pisrei Tshuva, Os Beis. What's Pisrei Tshuva? The author of the Pisrei Tshuva basically took all the great achronim that wrote tshuvas on the topic that the Shulchan Aruch is discussing, and he summarizes them for you. Ever wonder, like, how do people always know, oh, there's a tshuva of the Chassam Sofer about this, there's a tshuva of Rabbi Yeager, like everybody just read through the entire Chassam Sofer from front to back? No, it's all quoted in the Pisrei Tshuva. So the Pisrei Tshuva tells us as follows. Take a look. Os Beis in the Pisrei Tshuva, back to page one. Back to the first page on Tzchuchis. Ayin b'she'elas Yaivitz. Anyone know who the She'elas Yaivitz is? The Yaivitz was the son of the Chacham Tzvi. His name was Rav Yaakov Emden. Rav Yaakov Emden, the famous Rav Yaakov Emden, She'elas Yaivitz, says as follows. Kosov de kelim ha'boim mimidina sayam. Those kelim that come from far away. Shemikraim, porcelain. That says porcelain there. What medina sayam do you think they came from? China. Hence the name, China. So these things that come from porcelain, the domen l'kliz chuches, and they seem similar to glass. Why do they seem similar to glass? Because they're shiny. Ein tzrichim tefila. They don't need tefila. Why? L'fi shiyadua shasiyasa min achol u'min adama. Because everybody knows they're made from dirt, they're made from the ground. The klimateichos amur in the parsha. And it says metal in the Torah. The Afagav, the sheet, bay, and even though they're very smooth, less than bar, it doesn't matter. So Klis Chuchas is also Shvi, and yet the only reason why Klis Chuchas, the only reason why glass is Sayyid and Tefillah, is because if it breaks, you can reconstitute it, you can reform it. So ceramics, clay, china, all of these things are not Chayiv in Tefillah. Now, what we're going to talk about, we're not going to have time today, so we have to finish up with one last thing I want to mention. So don't pass an alacha l'maisa yet, is what if the clay is coated with an enamel, like a glass enamel? Very few of us use clay, actual clay kalim. We use clay kalim that are covered with glass or some type of covering. So we're not going to talk about that yet. I think actually our time is up. So Mirtz Hashem, next week, we have to speak about coated materials, glazed china. You're going to be surprised with a very, very big kula. We're going to have to talk a little bit about plastic, and then some of the more modern things like Teflon. If you have a frying pan that has Teflon, a non-stick surface, or stoneware, good. All of those types of those types of things. Then we're going to speak about one-time kalim and throwaway kalim. So, Mirtz Hashem, we will do that next week.